If you're looking for old episodes of I'd Hit That, you want to get on Patreon.com. $5 a month gets you access to the whole catalog, the old back catalog, the old episodes, the classics. Show's been around since 2012. You're looking online. You can't find them. Where the hell are they? You want to hear them? Patreon.com/IHTPod. IHTPOD. $5 a month. Cancel anytime. You can download all the episodes. Get the back catalog now. Patreon.com/IHTPod. Also, give us a follow on social media. We're on Instagram and X. IHTPod. IHTPOD. So
this is really the only day.
No, I know, man. I know. I just appreciate. All right, hold on. Let's. It's getting closer. He's just right on top of us.
We can try out back.
He's right on top of us, isn't he? He's coming, right? He's just...
He goes in circles.
We gotta talk about it. It's just too good, actually. This is actually a point... To me, it's kind of a point of comedy.
I know.
At this point.
It's country living.
I'm in Nashville.
You're in Mount Juliet.
Okay, hold on. Let's start over. I'm in Mount Juliet, Tennessee.
You're 20 minutes from...
With Fred...
You're only 20 minutes.
Well, hold on. Let me get this out. Hold on. Yeah. I'm in Mount Juliet, Tennessee with Fred Eltringham.
Yeah.
Go ahead. We're how far from...
We're only 20 minutes from downtown Nashville, but doesn't it seem like we're way out in the country?
Well, we can't seem to get away from that lawnmower.
Yeah. I have a neighbor who loves cutting his grass every day. Pretty much every day.
Every day.
Just a little bit.
Every day.
Or a lot.
see, folks, this...
And I love him. He's the best, but...
I cannot say the same right now.
Yeah. Okay.
The listeners might have want a word with him.
Yeah.
But folks, this...
See?
Folks, this is the best we can get right now. This is what it is. Fred is a busy man. And this is the window.
This is it, yeah.
We've got a sick child.
We got my teenage son. Has a cold inside. And oh, look, he's coming closer.
He's getting closer, folks. Look, he's gaining on us. Wow.
He's going to crank it up now, too.
Okay, well,
maybe he's gonna pull it in for it. Incredible, right? It's perfect timing.
Can we get a leaf blower going? Is there anything?
He doesn't use a leaf blower, actually. I've never seen him use a leaf blower. He's a good man.
He's a good man.
He's a hard-working dude.
On that lawn, I tell you. Keeps that lawn. It's manicured. And
it is, yeah. He does a good job.
You called it country living.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from outside of Philadelphia. Westchester, PA.
Interesting. I'm from Westchester County, New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See, we have so much in common.
Yeah. It's only like 3 hours away from each other. But East Coast.
East Coast. Wait, how long... Is this the first major... Music City you've lived in, or did you do L.A. No. and New York?
I lived in Boston for 9 years, all through the 90s.
Were you a Berkeley guy?
I was. I went to Berkeley for 2.5 years, early 90s.
Who was there
and
with
then,
you?
And then Abe Jr. was there. We were buddies. Little John Roberts.
Wow.
Nate Morton is badass, and John Blackwell.
Wow,
there was a lot of names. Yeah,
I have a feeling you might even be forgetting some names.
I'm sure I am. Yeah,
it's one of those.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy. Well, this episode is brought to you by John Deere. I'll tell you that right now.
It's actually a think he's got a Toro.
Yeah, well. All right. Berkeley, who were you then? I mean, because when I asked that, in other words, like, I remember Brian Tichy telling me, like, Jay Bellarose.
Oh, yeah, Tichy was up there.
Like, yeah, but he was, I remember him telling me, like, Jay Bellarose was, like, Chops guy, choppity chippity guy.
When I saw Jay, actually, he was a, he was in a band called Talking to Animals that was, like, pretty...
This is unbearable. No, I can't. I mean, now it's just unbearable. It's like, when he was at least over there, it's doable. Wait, where's he going now? Wow. Is he going to do your lawn now?
I guess so. I've not seen this move. Incredible.
Now he's taunting. He's just taunting.
He's doing circles.
He's doing donuts, exactly.
His own driveway.
You know, like the guy in front of the cops who does the donuts? Yeah. That's what I feel like he's doing.
Yeah, at the skate park.
He's just taunting us. Oh, God, no. You're just going to sit... Oh, no. Oh, almost lucky there.
Yeah.
Oh God, he's just right there now. He wow. Alright. Oh. He's gonna have to come back to get that other patch, isn't he?
Oh yeah. It's unbelievable.
Alright, hold on. You're getting out of frame a little bit. Oh, this is just...
Well, we can go out back. We can try out back on the back porch.
I don't know what to tell you, brother. I mean, either we just kind of sit and wait a minute.
Yeah.
And see, does he stop eventually at this
point? No. See, he's got the headlights going now. He's ready.
The torque is going. He's got the headlights.
He's ready for the
night. He's getting ready for the night. He's going to go deep into the night. By the way, folks, he's wearing headphones. He's protecting his hearing, which is good. He's good. Oh God. Okay. Well, I don't know what to say because he just keeps reappearing. I think it's safe.
Well, he's circling. He does his rounds.
That's a little better. Okay, hold on. Let me try to just You went to Woo. Berkeley College. Woo! You went to Berkeley.
Let's try out back.
Let's take a walk.
Let's do it. We'll go through the house.
Okay. I'll try to keep this live. I'm not going to stop.
All right, good.
We'll just keep it rolling.
Stay out of my way. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe it's just like raging out there. Like,
that's hysterical that you have that going.
This is Dave.
Hi, I'm Melissa.
Great to meet you, Melissa. Say hi to everyone, Melissa.
Hi, everyone.
There you go.
When are we going to do a podcast about being married to a drummer?
Oh.
That's really interesting.
I think we could keep the title.
Let's do it.
Of the show.
Yeah.
Right? That would work. Hey, we do it until he's back here, right? I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Incredible.
Okay. Here we are in the back.
We're back.
We're back
in the back.
We're back. Berkeley,
yeah.
What I was trying to say is that Tishy's told me that Bellarose was like this whole other kind of player.
He was. He was like Bonham style when I saw him.
Bellarose?
Yes. Like pretty slamming. He had a band called Talking to Animals. It was awesome. They were great.
And yeah, it was totally nothing like what he does now.
Nothing, right?
Nothing like it.
That's why I was kind of curious. I was like, who were you? Were you another guy?
I wasn't that much different, honestly. When I, like, listen to recordings and stuff from bands from back then, I think that I was always, like, I was in, like, power pop rock bands in Boston. And I was always kind of just like a song, rock and roll song drummer. That's kind of just what I was. So, so when I hear recordings from then, it kind of just sounds like me. I go like, wow, I really haven't gotten that much better than what I was then. I mean, it's kind of just what I am, I think. I don't know. Just a song drummer.
Because
I'm older,
I remember doing the like a summer course there.
Yeah, the 5-week program.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
And I remember getting there and seeing guys, and it was really sobering.
Oh yeah.
It was like oh.
Oh yeah. I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And actually, Abe was the first guy that I saw where I was like, okay, I might have a place here too.
What was it about Abe that made you?
Well, he was doing this clinic with Noel Redding from The Experience, and it was Abe playing with all these teachers and Noel. And I didn't know who Abe was. Yeah, we're the same age and everything, but it was just like a show for the 5-weekers at the Berklee Performance Center, and so they were just playing Hendrix songs, which would, you know, and I grew up on classic rock, so I was like, oh, this is killer. This is, and Abe was crushing it, obviously, and I was like, this dude's a beast. I want to meet this, you know, I want to meet him. So I actually did. Right after the show, I went up and said hello and introduced myself. And yeah, so he, because a lot of the other kids that I had seen, there was a lot of jazz kids. Lil Jon actually was someone who kind of intimidated me because he was such a monster jazz player, and I was just like, man, he obviously like grew up doing that though, you know, like yeah, that was part of his life, that was not part of my life.
Because that's what I'm saying. When I was there and I saw the level, and it was I don't do that.
Yeah,
and I don't think I really want to do that. And it was kind of,
well, I did though. I wanted to learn how to do that, but okay. I was still scared.
But that's what. So that's what's interesting to me, because you're saying you were essentially the same player that you are now. But there was that part of you that was like, but I want to be able to do that.
Well, I was kind of, yeah, I was curious to see if I could play, like, fusion or whatever. I didn't even know right. what fusion was.
Right. right. You weren't a Zappa guy going in.
I was not a Zappa guy, no.
Did you become that? Did you go into that? Did you deep dive?
No, not at all. I mean, I listened to it. I got turned on to it, but
you never quite took to it.
Never quite took to that.
Thank you.
Well,
I can appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah. I appreciate that music, and I think it's incredible. There was a guy, Joe Travers. You know Joe?
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah.
And so he was that guy. He was playing with all those cats. What was the name of the Brian Beller, his bass player? And they were all, there was like a group of Zappa dudes that would just play like in the cafeteria and stuff. They would do like Zappa shows and, which was also intimidating, because I was just like, I don't know what this is, but you know, it's incredible, and these guys are all monster players. But they were also all super nice dudes, you know, so it wasn't like, they weren't unapproachable. It was like, you could go up and talk to them about the music and kind of learn a little bit.
You said you did 9 years in Boston.
Yeah.
So did you do the full 4 at Berklee?
No, I didn't graduate. I went for like 2.5 years taking kind of a light class load because I was working a job and I was in bands and, you know, I was paying for school myself.
You were?
Student loans.
Oh, wow. What was the job, by the way?
I've had a bunch of different jobs. I worked at a shoe store, John Fluvog Shoes.
Yeah.
Which is where my wife and I met.
You met at the shoe store?
Mm-hmm.
Was she working there as well?
She was working there already, yeah.
Wow.
We met in 1994.
So this relationship goes back to college, basically?
Yeah, she was at BU. I had just dropped out, I think, of Berkeley when we met. But,
wow. Interesting. All right.
Yeah, we've been together a long time.
Yeah.
But I worked at UPS, the 4 a.m. loading truck shift.
Yeah, you didn't become a driver.
I did not become a driver, no.
Right.
I didn't last long in that. That was a really depressing time, actually.
That's hard work.
That was hard. Well, it wasn't that hard work. It was like, you're just loading trucks, but getting there... Getting up at 3 in the morning and going there and being there at 4 in the morning. I mean, I have a lot of respect for those people who do that.
Hell shit. What time did you quit at that? When you started at 4 a.m.?
You're done by 8:30. This is like a 4-hour shift.
Oh, okay.
You just load the truck and then they go.
Okay.
You know.
And then are you playing at night as well at that point?
I was playing in a rock band, yeah.
So you're doing gigs like, until like 1 a.m. and then be at work at 4?
Sometimes, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
But
seemed like a good idea, I bet, right, with that schedule. You thought,
yeah,
this
yeah,
will actually
like, oh,
make
this
sense.
Will work out.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah. And the money was pretty good, too. They paid well.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this will be like, I'll have my days free
right.
for rehearsal and everything right. or whatever, you know.
But, meanwhile, you're sleeping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would come home and eat breakfast and go to bed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my schedule was totally wacko.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I did all kinds of crazy stuff. I worked at a music catalog, like a magazine that sold CDs called Hear Music that a bunch of my friends worked at. And they were like, hey, come work with us. All kinds of different stuff. Waitering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting by.
Yep, I hear you. So, yeah. but staying in Boston.
But then I stayed because I, well, one thing led to another, and I joined this band called the Gigolo Ants. We were on, they were on RCA, and we were part of the Boston rock scene. Everyone was signed to like an indie label. Some were signed to major labels. And everybody was touring, and we just, you know, we were doing it. I was out. I went on the road, basically. Actually, in 1994, when my wife and I got together, is when I got the gig with the Gigolo Ants and started touring, like, nonstop, van touring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I did that for 6 years straight.
Really?
With them, yeah.
How many dates are you talking a year? Like a 200 range?
I don't know. It depended on probably not that many. But we opened for everybody. Like we did a lot of shows with the Counting Crows. Somehow we became good friends with Adam Duritz. And after we got dropped from RCA, he signed us to his label through Interscope. It was called E Pluribus Unum. And so we did tons of shows opening for them. He signed like three or four different acts, and we all kind of rotated, like just going on tour with them. But we opened for like Matthew Sweet on a bunch of dates, and Cracker, and the Wallflowers, and just everybody from that era that was kind of
yeah,
in
90s.
That sort of like playing big clubs, you know, in that era.
Yeah, yeah.
Or theater gigs and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. And you liked it? Like you...
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was what I wanted to do, you know. I always wanted to be in a band. I was always in a band.
Right.
I started playing with my brothers and my sister when I was 8. So I've always been in a band my whole life, and so yeah, to be able to go on tour, you know, that was it. I thought
and making money.
No. 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 Very, very scraping by.
Right.
You know, they had like a publishing deal, and so we kind of would pay ourselves a very small stipend out of that each month.
Yeah.
So, and when I was home, I could work either at the shoe store or whatever, because my wife was working at the shoe store. Or I would do catering, waitering jobs in between. And that was all like temporary work. So if I wasn't in the, if we weren't in the van, I was home doing that.
Yeah. Okay, 6 years of that.
6 years of that.
What happened?
Then I quit the band. I was like ready to go back to school, or just like kind of, I was just kind of like burnt out a little bit. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And I almost, I got accepted to nursing school at UMass Boston.
That was, that's where you were thinking
that
of going
was my next thing,
your
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I started working at a restaurant, and I was like ready to go back to school and go into that. And then Juliana Hatfield called me to do a tour. She was like a indie rocker.
Yeah.
Do you remember Juliana?
I remember Juliana Hatfield.
Yeah, she's awesome. And at first I said no. I was like, no, I'm starting a new life. I was like, I don't think I want to do this anymore, you know, so, but thanks for calling. And, like, a couple days later, my wife was just like, what are you doing? Why are you, you know, you should take that tour. Take the tour. She's like, just go and do it and see what happens, you know, and so I did. I called her back, and I said, you still need a drummer. Thankfully, she did. And,
the wife that said hello to everyone.
Yeah.
The wife.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
No
wonder.
No,
very supportive.
No wonder you kept her.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. 29 years.
You almost, like, went into nursing, and she was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. She's like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Think about that.
I know.
Let's take a moment.
I know. It's crazy.
Whoa.
She's crazy. We're both crazy.
Whoa. Think of that. What it could have been.
I know. And so, that...
So you did it.
So I did that tour.
And by the way, let's just be honest. I mean, does that mean there's money, or is it still like, oh, God, no. Is it...
No, it wasn't great money. It was,
but
like,
better money than...
It was better, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was a lot better than what we were making in the Gigolo ads. And, but the tour wasn't very long. It wasn't a whole... It wasn't like... a year of work or anything. I think we did like a half a year, maybe, something like that.
So were you thinking like back to that plan then? Were you, was it that?
Well, then I was just kind of like, what do I do now? Because I had missed out on going, I missed the school window. And so we decided to move to LA. And my wife's originally from Thousand Oaks, so we had family out there.
Ah.
And
AKA Thousand Drummer Oaks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Gary Malibur, I think, lives out there.
They all, I thought, yeah. Like, who doesn't?
Well, we moved to Sherman Oaks too, and there was a lot of drummers there too. But yeah, so we did it. We moved to LA because a lot of our Boston friends had made the same move. After the Boston 90s scene kind of died down a bit, people were moving out there. And, yeah, so I did that, and we lived there for 2 years, and it was really hard. I was doing catering, waitering, and not gigging hardly at all. Yeah, didn't have a regular gig. You know, I was just kind of like flailing, completely flailing. Yeah. And Melissa was working at a chili restaurant, Chili My Soul. I don't know if you know that restaurant.
Love it.
In Encino. And, not Encino. What is it? Is that Encino? Is Encino in the valley? No.
Yeah.
Okay. But, she was working there. It was really depressing. It was a super dark time. And, I had one really good friend, Charlton Pettis, producer. Turned out he lived, like, just around the corner from me. He found out that I had moved there. And, started hiring me to come over and play on tracks at his house in his garage. And one day he called me and said, hey, come on over, I want you to play on this thing. It was, I got there, it was Kurt Smith from Tears for Fears, and he was making a solo album. And so we started making his solo album, and you know, they would give me like $100 a song, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is incredible. And, you know, I'm a working drummer again. And,
kind of notorious with drummers, though, no? Kurt?
What do you mean?
As far as, like, aren't they known for being kind of ball busters with the drummers?
He was not at all.
But you know what I mean, or no?
No.
You haven't heard that?
No. I had known that he had worked with,
like
the greatest drummers in the world.
That's kind of what I mean. Like, their standards are really high.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, real.
Yeah.
But there was...
So I was honored. I was just kind of like, this is
so fucking... So he was just, like, kind of loving everything you did?
Yeah. It was super fun. It was really cool. This super mellow...
Are you tracking music with a band live? Kind of?
No. They had tracked a bunch of stuff to, like, drum machines and things. Loops or whatever.
Is he there when you're laying down your
mm-hmm.
stuff?
Yeah.
And he's just like, love it. Sound great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And Charlton's a great engineer. They had known each other back in New York and stuff. And so they had a great relationship. And it was just really fun. And during that time, while we were doing that record, he got back together with Roland from Tears for Fears. And they put the band back together and started writing songs. And then started calling me to come over and play on the beginnings of...
Yeah.
Their reunion record. And so we did all that at Charlton's house, and then when the record was almost fully realized, aside from the garage drum sounds that we had, we went to Sound City and put all the real drums on in 1 week and made an awesome record. So that was like the greatest thing that happened to me during those 2 year really rough period. And so during that time, someone else, at the end of those 2 years, my friend Ben Queller, who had opened for Juliana on that tour that I did, his drummer quit. Ben was based out of New York. His drummer quit, and he said, hey, would you want to come out and tour with us on it was his first solo album. And I was like, fuck yes. And we moved to New York, all the way across the country. Got in a Penske truck, loaded up all of our shit, and drove all the way across.
You moved to New York to do that?
Yeah.
How does that even work, though? Because he wants to go on the road, or?
Yeah.
So why move? I mean, seriously, like, why do that?
Because L.A. was not happening for me.
Okay, you just were like, did it, done.
And we had always wanted to live in New York as well.
Okay.
We were still young.
Yeah.
And it was like, let's just go. Let's just go and do it. You know, L.A. was, it was really rough. And we were like, let's get the fuck out of here.
What year is this?
That was 2002.
Wow. Yeah, so still fresh after, yeah, interesting. The 9/11 whole thing and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was right after that.
Yeah.
And,
I think our man is taking a break, folks.
That's nice.
Oof.
So then, Ben, that was, like, the greatest experience. It was so awesome. We became the best of friends, and, we toured. I did that tour for 2 years. And we loved living in New York. It was awesome. I didn't do any kind of, like, outside work there. Like, I wasn't doing sessions or anything like that.
Where were you living?
We lived in Inwood.
Inwood.
Yeah, we were 207th.
Peach Tavern up there?
Yeah, we were on 207th and Broadway, right on Broadway. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
It's like the Bronx.
We were the last stop on the A train. It's right before the Bronx. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's killer.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, I love Inwood. I know Inwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would go fish in the Hudson, mm-hmm. in that Inwood Hill Park.
There. Close enough to Van Cortlandt Park. And
yeah. It was beautiful.
Yep.
And Ben's whole thing was in Brooklyn, so I'm just like...
Wow, it's a long train ride,
It's a little bit of train ride, yeah.
It's 2 hours?
Not quite.
Hour and a half?
About an hour, yeah. A little over an hour, probably.
A little over? Only that?
Yeah,
probably. I'm surprised. Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's express A-train from...
Right. Take the A-train, as they say. Okay. That's all
you... So that was 2 years, playing with Ben, and then...
Again, better money. Are we moving up? Are we keep?
Yeah,
we keep going up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. That was pretty good.
Because no more jobs, right? Now you're a drummer.
Well, I would come home and work at the. Oh. We were actually Melissa was managing the John Flewbug store in Soho. She took over doing that because he needed a new manager. Just like the timing of that worked out really great too. When we were moving there, he happened to need a new manager at the Flewbug store there, so. And so when I would come home from touring with Ben, I would work at the store still.
Okay.
So, and which was great. It was awesome. We were in Soho. You know, it was a great place to be. And so, did that for 2 years. And then the Wallflowers called to do that gig.
How does that even happen?
Because of the touring back in the day, the Gigolo Ants, we opened... Say. We opened for them a bunch.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like how that works. Like this, the work you do.
Yeah.
And then how, because how many years later is that call?
That was almost 9 years later or something like that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's amazing when shit works like that.
Well, Greg from the Wallflowers, the bass player, he and I got to be really good friends on the road. And actually the first time when we were living in LA, that first little stint, he was another person who called and had me come and play on little things that he would be producing and stuff like that.
Okay.
So that was cool.
So he is it probably fair to say he pushed for you initially? Is that he was the one going, hey,
yes.
I got the guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Did you have, but there was no audition needed?
No audition.
Right.
No. And I knew all the dudes.
I was going to say, what am I talking about? Like, you toured with
we
them.
Toured
Jacob
with
saw
them.
It, heard you, everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And then there was times like we ran into each other on the road when I was playing with Ben and stuff like that. So
they were just all like, yeah, Fred, cool, good idea.
Yeah.
Let's get Fred.
Yeah, Mario, left the band and they were just like, well, maybe we can call Fred and see what he's doing.
And, did you know Mario at that point?
Yeah.
How did you know? Oh, from touring. Hello. Yeah. I keep.
And we got along great too.
Wow.
Hello, Mario. It's awesome.
Did you have a discussion with him at that point or no? Did you check in with him?
No.
Had you did you even know that
point,
happened?
Maybe but, some point later we probably
like had you
did.
Known that happened at the moment, or was when he called you? Was it like what you Mario left, or did you know already?
I didn't know, Greg. No, I didn't know.
Okay.
No, Greg called me one night. I think we were just out like getting pizza or something, and he was like, "Hey, Mario just left the band. We have some shows coming up, and I actually couldn't do those shows. I think Matt Chamberlain went and did those shows." And I actually needed some time to finish out some stuff with Ben, because we were actually starting Ben's second record, and the timing didn't flow or whatever at first, but it all got sorted out, and I took the gig, and then Melissa, my wife, got pregnant. And we moved back to L.A. because Wallflowers were L.A. They were L.A. band. We were like, well, maybe we should go back to L.A. to be closer to family out there for the baby that time. And
women have a pull towards the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was great. And it kind of all just, that time it all kind of fell together for the L.A. for the LA thing.
When this happens, are you a hired gun or are you...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I mean,
like you're in the band, but you're not in the band. Is it that kind of thing? Like, we want you, you're the guy, but you're not.
Yeah, I mean, I was like in the band, but they put me on like a salary.
Right.
So that, yeah.
Right. But you could be in the pictures and...
Yeah. I was in the pictures and stuff.
Yeah. No, that's important. I mean, it's the distinction.
Yeah.
Because a lot of bands still pull that stuff.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was great. They were awesome.
Like, Daryl never makes the picture. Well, he makes some pictures in the Stones, I guess, some. But not...
Yeah, I know, that's
not
true.
Not usually.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're going to do only three of them now. Anyway, that's a different story.
I don't know.
Were you happy with the salary? Were you like, hey, this is nice?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was like...
You keep moving up.
Yeah.
As I keep saying. You keep moving up.
Yeah, and right? I was with people that I really liked.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just like, I can keep playing music.
Now
music can, that I loved.
Now can you stop working? Like, another jobs at this point?
Yeah, I think I did, actually, then. I think I did.
Are you basically on retainer when you say salary? Is it like that? Like,
I guess, I don't know if we call it... I think it was more of a salary than a retainer. I don't know. Same thing.
Basically. Okay. Yeah. Like when you're not on the road, though, yeah. you're good.
I was
good.
Still getting paid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to be there and be
a wallflower.
Be a part of everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How long did that last for?
I was in the band for 9 years, but it was like...
That seems crazy.
I know. It was on and off because... So we went and made a record... We went and made a record with Brendan O'Brien in Atlanta, which was awesome. And we started touring, and and Rami left the band right around that time during that tour. And
sudden, or
it was a bit of a sudden thing. Yeah, it was like a little bit of a falling out type deal, and things got a little rough.
Some drama.
Yeah, it was just like regular kind of band drama. Stuff happens, you know.
Yeah.
And so Jake, we toured for a little bit longer, and then Jake was kind of like, let's put the brakes on for a little while and take a little hiatus. And I was like, oh fuck, what am I gonna do now? You know, I got a little baby. And just moved out to L.A. Wasn't that long after we had moved out there. And so I started looking for other gigs around that time. And reached out to Michael Bland,
the
drummer, who I had met when I was playing.
Soul Asylum.
Yeah, Soul Asylum and Prince.
Prince.
And we met when he was playing with Paul Westerberg. Gigolo Ants opened some gigs for Paul Westerberg, and Michael was playing. And we got to be buddies. And so I just reached out to him, reached out to a bunch of people, a bunch of drummer friends, just to be like, hey, have you heard anything cool happening, you know? And he said, actually, well, yeah, I just played on this track for the Dixie Chicks, and they asked me to tour with them, but I just said yes to the Soul Asylum tour, and so I can't do it, but here's the tour manager's email. And so I reached out. I didn't really know a lot of Dixie Chick songs. I knew one song. I knew Wide Open Spaces, and I was like, that's a really cool song. I love that song. I was like, that's somebody I'd be happy to play that song every night. And I don't know, I had this weird feeling about the gig. Like, as soon as I got that email from him, I was like, oh, that's... something feels right about this. I don't know why. So I reached out to the tour manager, and he said, here, send your info and, like, you know, packet or whatever to David Grissom, who was the band leader.
He's been on the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that he'd just been on. I love David. He's awesome. And so I did, and I think like 2 weeks later he called me and said, we're going in a different direction. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, cool, whatever. I was like, well, keep me in mind if anything happens, right. You know, if anything falls through. Because I think Kenny Aronoff was also in the running. And they were old buds from the Mellencamp days. And so I, you know, I just thought that was over. And a couple days later, I happened to be talking to Gary Loris from the Jayhawks, who we had also played gigs with the Wallflowers. And he said, I didn't get the gig. Because he was writing with the Dixie Chicks. He was writing songs with the Dixie Chicks at that time. I said, yeah, I guess they found somebody else. He's like, no, they didn't. They haven't found anybody yet. Or they haven't decided 100% on anyone. And I was like, oh, wow. Well, if you can put in a word, you know, that would be awesome. And he did. He told him, like, that day. Said, you should check out or talk to Fred or whatever. And they called me up. And they said, come on down, we're at the Village recording some stuff. You want to come down and just say hello and hang out for a minute? So I did. I went down there and just hung out with Marty and Natalie for like an hour and a half, just sitting there shooting the shit. They had no idea who I was. I didn't know who they were. And we just like had a great time, and we just hit it off. And and then they called me for the gig 2 days later. Never played a note.
Yeah.
Boom. Boom.
Amazing.
It was incredible.
Well, I guess you got Grissom's blessing as far as that part.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, he's tough to read, isn't he?
He was, yes, especially around that time. I didn't know him at all. I had never even met him or anything. Like, we had talked on the phone for a second, you know, 1 second.
Like, that's a poker face, where he was like, right? Am I right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, he called me and was like, oh, you got the gig. And I was like, oh, weird. Yeah. You know, this is weird. But I was very thankful that I got
the gig. Yeah, how do you guys act when you don't like someone? You know, like, yeah. No, I'm joking. Like, you know, yeah. I know what you mean. You're like, wow, this is really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's crazy.
This is this is when you like someone. Yeah. This is okay. Yeah. Like, all right.
This is wild.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then I had that gig. But I was still in the Wallflowers.
Right, right.
And so, like, I did this. I signed on for like a year. I signed actually for 2 years of touring with the Dixie Chicks.
They wanted you to sign for 2 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
They were like, well, there's definitely this year and most likely next year was the deal.
Okay.
And this was like 2006 or something. And so we did the year, and then that's when they won, like, five Grammys and all this stuff for that. It was the Rick Rubin record, you know. Mm. And the documentary, Shut Up and Sing, and all that
stuff. No, they blew up. That's right. They did have that blow. Yeah.
It was a really great moment for them. But then they were so burnt out from everything that had been going on that they canceled. They called off the next year. They were like, we're not actually going to tour.
We need a break.
Yeah, we need a break from all the drama and just everything. And so I was kind of like, okay, I had to find another gig. And I think maybe the Wallflowers did a few gigs after that year, but I got another gig with this band called The Wreckers, which was Michelle Branch's country thing. She had a little country duo with this other girl, Jessica Harp. Forget how that came together. Even somebody recommended me something, I don't know, but I was like literally the ninth drummer in that band and went into it. And that was a lot of touring. It was really hard touring. Yeah, I did that for 18 months, like super
hard touring, because it wasn't as comfy.
It wasn't as comfy as, like, yeah, coming out of the
yeah
chicks camp and everything like
yeah
that.
Yeah.
It was like day rooms and and just like a lot of gigs and you know, it was hard, it was like harder, but it was still fun. We had a great time.
Right. But it was almost a little backtrack now. Now we're going, we kept going up and up and up, and then all of a sudden it was
it was just like another, it was another gig, you know, it was like, I was still gigging and making a living, so I was, I was happy.
Sure.
And we actually had moved here, during that time, right at the end of the Chicks thing, and at the start of the Records thing, we moved here.
Now, what prompted that? Why? Because, I mean, I'm only asked because, again, you mentioned you had the child, be close to family.
Yeah, and then we had our other son out there.
Okay.
So two boys out in LA.
Okay.
And
what prompted Nashville then?
Well, I guess it was, there was a couple guys in the band, the Chicks band lived here, and the Wreckers band was all Nashville guys, and they were just kind of like, you should check it out, you know, I think you'd do well here, and you'd probably really like it, and I could not afford a house in LA, and we didn't know how long we wanted to stay in LA anyway. It's like, we liked it, but we didn't love it. 3 years had kind of passed that we lived there. And so I started looking at houses out here. And this, where you are now, is one of those houses. And that was it. And we were just like, okay, let's do it. Let's move. And
so this was the house you got?
Yeah, 16 years ago.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just been here.
Yeah.
You got a great property here.
Yeah, it's awesome. We got 3 acres and...
Three?
Yeah.
Damn.
And we're right...
And the people in LA are...
Right down the lake.
Just
I
like,
know. Well, that's the thing. It was like we were looking at houses in Van Nuys that were on a tiny quarter acre lot, and it was like $1 million.
Sure.
And we were like, there's no way. No way.
You get the helicopters every night.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was just hard.
Here's our man, he's back.
No, that was just a car.
That's a car?
Yeah, truck.
Oh, that's a truck, okay, good.
So, let's see, what else happened there? So, the Wreckers, that, I ended up leaving, just because I got a little burnout. And,
yeah,
and
18 months of that, yeah.
It was, like, pretty solid 18 months, too. Coming right out of the Chicks, solid year after. And Wallflowers, like, right before that. So I was pretty burnt. But, and then Jacob had been working on a solo album while I was doing the Wreckers thing. And so he was asked me if I wanted to do the tour for that, for his solo album. And so I did that.
You didn't say, you weren't like, well, why didn't you ask me to play on the record, bro?
No.
No, I'm just having fun.
No, actually, because, I mean, he made it with Rick Rubin was kind of executive producer.
Right.
And this guy, Matt Sweeney, produced it and had his dudes and everything.
Sure.
And I was just happy that Jacob was, you know, doing stuff.
By the way, does Bob Dylan ever come to a show? No, I'm serious. I'm asking. Like
when I was in the band,
you were in the Wallflowers. Like, did he ever come by and just to?
No, when I was in the band, no, he didn't come to any shows.
I was just curious. Like,
yeah.
If he ever came by just to support his son.
You know,
as a father,
they are all pretty tight though.
No, I was just curious. Like as a father, he didn't ever once come when you were there.
When I was in the band, he wasn't at any shows. No. But I did meet him once.
Oh, you did? Okay.
At Jake's house.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for like a birthday party for one of the kids or whatever. But,
gotcha.
And they played shows. They did play shows together and stuff.
But not with you, you're saying?
Not when I was in the band.
Yeah, gotcha. I gotcha. Okay. No, I was just curious again.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He's got a lot of kids.
Yeah.
I do know that. Like 10 to 12, perhaps? Something in that range. A lot of kids.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
I guess, Jacob, those guys are, like, the least to worry about because it's, like, they're employed and they're, like, it's okay. He has to worry about the young ones.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he's still having them, you know what I mean? Like,
really? I don't know.
No, I mean, I say that half-jokingly, like, you know, the way, like, Pacino and De Niro have just fathered children.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
late in life.
Don't be shocked if you read Bob Dylan.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, don't be shocked. I know, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
My man gets around. You know what I mean? He likes to, you know what I mean?
But, well, when I met him, he was very nice.
I'm sure
he was. He was really nice.
So,
but we did play shows with Cheryl. We played some shows opening for him, which was really cool.
Right. Okay. So anyway, that happens, the Jacob thing, and you go on tour with him.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah.
And some other Wallflowers gigs happen after that. I mean, it just kind of sporadically kind of went on for like 9 years while I was doing other things.
Right.
And then finally what was the next thing I did was, I made a record here. I started doing sessions and stuff in Nashville. And, one thing I got called to do was a record for K.D. Lang. And that was incredible. She was so friggin' cool. And that was through, let me think, because Josh Grange, the pedal steel player, who had also played with me with the Chicks, and Daniel, her piano player. He also was in the Chicks and this other side thing that the Chicks did called the Courtyard Hounds. The two sisters had a band called the Courtyard Hounds that I toured with as well during that whole on-off Wallflowers time. That was another thing we did. And there were some other Dixie Chicks gigs in between there too, where they would be like, we're going to go do 5 shows in Canada or whatever, and let's go do it. So the K.D. Lang made that record, and then she asked me to go on the road with her, which was great. And that was like a band thing. She called it K.D. Lang and the Swiss Boom Bang. And so we did that for like a year. And while we were doing that, Jake actually called me. I think we were in Australia, and he said, hey, we're thinking about doing another Wallflowers record, and we're going to do it in Nashville with Jay Joyce. And do you still want to be a part of the band? And would you want to do the record? And I said, no. I was pretty much, I was happy with what I was doing. Like, at that point, I was kind of like, I don't think I want to go back to doing it anymore.
Was it also because, I mean, he's talking dates and you're looking at the book and you're just like, well, I'm booked. Is it also that? I mean, or just a flat out, like, just not interested?
Kind of
like,
yeah, I was just kind of like,
I'm over it.
I was like, I got a little bit burnt out on, like, kind of just, like, waiting for things to happen. And
Yeah.
And I started having things happen for me here where it was like, oh, I'm a little more in charge of my own
I'm not life. At your beck and call anymore.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. No more shines. Like, nobody went up and told you, like, I don't shine shoes anymore.
It was just kind of like, I was just ready to move on. It wasn't like any kind of like, I fucking hate you guys or anything like that. It was just kind of like,
you know, bands are like relationships, right? They always say that, like a marriage, you know. And then you said there's always drama. There's this and that.
Yeah.
And it's like an ex. Like, hey, it's like, no. No, we broke up.
Yeah.
No, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not. Yeah. No.
Well, I am, and I've got to say, I'm not the best communicator in that realm. And, you know,
I think that's why your wife wants to do the podcast.
Yeah, that's
about being married to you. Right.
I'm not good at confrontation or anything like that.
Right.
And so it was hard. It was a weird breakup. I don't know. They didn't break up. I left.
Sure.
They did come and make the record, and Jack Irons joined the band.
I remember that era. Yeah.
And it was killer. And we actually did a show together while I was playing with Cheryl. We played Memphis in May together. But so I mean, it got weird, yes, but I was just like in a new kind of life here.
Yeah.
And I was happy, and I'm happy.
Yeah, you really hit your stride here.
Yeah, something came together.
Yeah.
It was really nice. And, you know, it's like I never even sought out. I never even thought I was going to be, like, a session guy or anything like that. And it just kind of, like, slowly morphed into that for me here. And it's been really incredible.
Yeah, you, like, thought you were a band guy.
I was always a band guy. That's what I always was. And, yeah, I thought I was a band guy. And I still am. Like, when I'm in a... Like, the things that I get into, it always feels... like a band. I think I don't know what it is. There's, you know, everyone has their role kind of in a band, and their personality fits that thing every time you're in a different band, in a way. And I don't know, everything that I've been a part of always feels like band. It's not like there's our boss and we're these people over here. Mm-hmm. Everything that I've been a part of has been, like, solid. So,
because even like those people, the artists you're talking about, seems like they wanted to be part of.
They wanted to be a band.
Like Michelle Branch, that was her band.
It was the
thing.
Records, yeah.
And then you said Katie Lang, and that was like,
yeah,
the
she
band.
Was like, let's call it, let's have it be a band.
Yeah, like even she wanted.
Yeah,
she was like, I'm tired of being alone.
Yeah.
Al Green over here. Yeah, like, I'm tired of this. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right?
Like, yes, completely.
The Ringo always brought that up, right? We always felt sorry for Elvis. You know, that, it's that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, I want that.
Yeah, she wanted to be. And that was a hard one, actually. That was when the Cheryl gig came up, and I was playing with KD when the Cheryl gig came up, and Cheryl asked me to be a part of her band. That was a really tough call. Because I love Katie and everyone in that situation.
Wait, you toured, you played, in other words, you opened or whatever it was with Cheryl.
No. With Katie, those two paths never crossed. It was, forget how, okay. I had a band with Peter, her band leader, Peter Stroud. We had a little side band called Big Hat that was with this guy here named Keith Gaddis, great songwriter from here, just passed away, actually. And Audley Freed, who had been...
Black Crowes.
Yeah, he was in Black Crowes, but we toured with the Chicks. We met with the Chicks. He also toured with me with Jacob Solo, on Jacob Solo record. He was part of the Big Hat thing. His buddy Robert Kearns, and this keyboard player Ike Stubblefield, from Atlanta, he's friends with Peter. But so Peter approached us one day and said, "Hey, Cheryl has this corporate gig coming up where the regular dudes, Jeremy Stacy." Was playing drums with her, and keyboards was Mikey Rowe and Tim Smith, who had been with her for a long time too, also Atlanta guy. They were all out with Noel Gallagher, and she had this corporate gig coming up that she had to play in New Orleans, and he was like, would you guys want to do this one-off thing with her? Mm-hmm. We were like, fuck yes, of course, you know. And he's like, well, now there's a chance that this could turn into more, because she's thinking about having a Nashville-based band. Because she moved here. She moved here, like, maybe a year or two before I did. And we went and rehearsed with her and got these, like, an hour set together for the corporate gig. And shortly after that, she was like, do you guys want to be my band? And we were like, yes, for sure. So I have Peter Stroud to thank for that, but, that's when I had to call KD and be like, hey, I just got offered this. Like, KD's thing was more of like, I could tell that it was going to be more of like, do a record tour and then take a long time off before she writes another record, you know, that kind of, that tour, sort of touring schedule. Whereas Cheryl, she never stops. It's really consistent. Like, we tour every year. We have shows almost every month. and like we mostly tour in the summertime. We'll do a couple weeks each month in the summer, and then the rest of the year we'll play like 3 or 4 gigs a month. And so it's like a pretty ideal thing, and that's been almost 12 years of that.
That's incredible, that consistency.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying.
Yeah.
Does anyone else do that? Like, that consistent? Well, I guess...
I think there are people who do that.
I was going to say, actually, now that I think about it, here, especially here, especially that whole weekend thing.
Well, yeah, the country people, they never stop either.
It's just like, because it's the weekend.
Just weekends, all, yeah, forever.
Yeah.
We tried doing that with Cheryl for a little bit. We did a little bit of country.
She tried
style
that?
Touring, yeah, but it was just too hard. She's a single mom. She adopted 2 boys when they were babies, and now they're teenagers and stuff, so that's why during the school year, it's just a couple gigs a month, and then we mostly tour in the summertime.
Hmm.
But it's...
I guess she doesn't need to, is also part of it.
She doesn't need to, but she loves it.
Yeah.
She loves performing, she loves being in the mix, she loves seeing new artists coming up, and, like, helping them, and, like, just being a part of the music scene. She loves being a part of.
Well, you in that time, I mean, also she's had a lot of different people. I mean, wait, did you got to work or I don't know, so I'm just bear with me, but was Doyle in the band ever or no?
No, he did that. She did a record where he produced it. It was called 100 Miles from Memphis.
He
produced it with her.
Okay.
And maybe co-wrote songs, I'm not sure. Okay. I can't remember.
Were they already a couple when he produced it? Or was...
I don't even know their...
Okay.
I don't...
No, I was curious.
Like, I don't want to ask about that.
No, because I'm asking because, like, so did you ever get to play with him, I'm asking?
I have, yeah. He's come up and sat in with us and stuff.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the road.
Yeah.
Like we've done shows with Clapton and things like that.
Right.
Or we're with Doyle opening, mm-hmm. like, with his solo thing. And mm-hmm. he'll sit in with us and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheryl's manager, Scooter, managed Doyle for years, too.
So it's
a pretty close-knit
sort
of deal.
That's how these things all happen. It's who but you know. It's always, see?
A lot, yes.
Everything,
I mean,
everything is who you know.
Ever gotten is from meeting people on the road.
Everything.
And, like, meeting Peter Stroud. I met him on the road. I think I met him first time. When I was playing with the Chicks, because he had a line of amps called 65 Amps, and I think maybe Grissom or somebody in the band was using 65 Amps, or maybe it was just like Audley's friends with him and he came out to a gig or something. And then definitely in the Wreckers, Peter was around, because I think people either in our band or who we were opening with in the country world, we're using his amps, and so we were just like, we see each other and be like, hey, what's going on? And then, like, when I toured with KD, he came out to the KD gig, I think, and yeah, so it's all who you it's all just being friends with people, you know.
Like we said, I mean, look at the 9-year gap. It's like you're doing that, the gigolo and the ant, you know, and then all of a sudden 9 years later, like, hey,
yeah,
I remember you.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
That's how it works.
It is exactly how it works.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
You just have to, go out there and do it.
You just have to do it. You have to keep doing it.
Yeah. You almost became a fucking nurse.
I could be living in Boston being a nurse right now.
Do you just thank her every night? You go, thank you, thank you.
We talk about it a lot, how crazy.
It comes up. And she gets to, like, lord it over you, see?
No.
I'm totally kidding. If it wasn't for me, you'd be
a nurse. We kind of laugh at how kind of, like, you know, blindly we went into everything just going, like, of course this is going to happen. Or, right. You know, or like, just let's see what happens.
Let's go to New York.
So I can just do it.
Let's go. Let's go back to LA.
4 cross-country moves in a Penske truck with all of our crap. Yeah. It's crazy.
It is insane. And yet, like, you wouldn't advise your sons to do that.
Maybe I might actually.
Well, are they into music?
Yeah,
both.
Yeah, they're both great. But my older son, he's studying to be a paramedic. He's actually going to do.
See, I see the connection with the nurse. I see that's like a thing.
Yeah, there you go.
There's like a thing there.
Yeah, he does love the medical thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and he's he lives at Cheryl's bass player, my my buddy Robert's house. He's got a little apartment there in Madison, mm-hmm. where you're staying.
Interesting.
And he works at the hospital in Madison.
Interesting.
In the ER. He's already advanced EMT, and he's studying to be a paramedic. But he is a monster guitar player. He's so good. He's like a beast.
Does he want to do that?
He went
that?
To the arts high school here.
Does he want to do that? I mean...
Yeah, he still wants to keep playing, but I don't know whether... he's not going to, like... I don't think he's going to try, like, to go on the, you know, the route that I did.
Because it's that thing. That's, like, that weird thing of, like, the kid who's like, well, I don't drink because my dad was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then there's the kid who's like, you know why I drink? Because my dad was an alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah,
do you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? Because my dad's a touring musician.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, but he's seen only good things. Like, he's seen all the good stuff.
Mm.
Neither of them saw the struggle. Like, they were alive for part of the
But they only part remember of the, struggle. The good
They don't remember it, like, when we were living in Sherman Oaks in a little apartment and stuff. Like,
right.
I mean, we have pictures of it, and we have some video.
The Tears for Fears era.
Yeah. That was pre them.
I'm saying, all they really remember is the Dixie Chicks and the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the first.
The upswing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicks, the Wallflower.
The Nashville years.
And then the Nashville years. Yeah. Because when we moved here, they were 1.5 and 3.
Were there
my younger one is a monster piano player.
And he might?
Yeah. He's definitely gonna.
He's got it.
He's in it, yeah.
He's that guy.
He's already gigging. He just played. He's 17. He's already played South by Southwest. He's already played gigs in New York with this girl. You know, he's playing with his friend who's got a family band. They just played in Ohio a couple gigs. And
yeah, he's got the bug. It's done.
He's doing it. He's already doing it.
Like, you recognize it. You're like, uh-oh, you got it.
Yeah, he really loves it. And they're both so good. They're way better musicians than I will ever be, still. And so far beyond where I was, like, at 17, just, like, the mindset of the musicianship and living here and going to the arts, public arts high school here.
Right, right.
And getting to play with these other kids.
It's the fame it's the fame school of Nashville.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I got you. By the way, have there been gigs that came up and it didn't happen, maybe something like that, close call, audition? Those stories, those are always fun.
I've had auditions.
Yeah? Anything you want to share? Like, maybe you don't want to share?
They were terrible. Auditioning is a horrible experience. For me, it was horrible. It was not a fun...
Yeah.
I auditioned for Alanis Morissette.
Okay.
That may have been during the first couple years in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird. It did not go well.
Would that have been post-Taylor?
It was right before...
Or pre-Taylor?
It was post-Taylor, yeah.
Okay.
It was right when Blair... Cinta was getting
gotcha,
the gig.
Gotcha.
And he pretty much had the gig before I walked in that room, because it was all his buddies, and I think they had made up their mind, which is fair, you know, that's great. But they were still auditioning people, and I went in. They were auditioning guitar players and drummers at the same time, and Alanis was not there. And I'm gonna turn on one of these lights, so it's not so dark. And so, I went in, had to learn a couple songs. The guitar player did not really know the songs very well, and we had no vocal, so it was rough. It was not a good audition. Like, I know what a song is supposed to sound like.
Right, right.
And we did not do it. And so I was just kind of left there feeling very... I was just like, man, that was brutal. I knew I didn't have a chance of getting the gig or anything, but... So that was a little bit... that was a little rough. And then my other audition was here. Pre-Cheryl, it was... pre-KD, too, for Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, yeah.
And I got called back to do a second audition, and then the band leader, he kind of took me out for a beer and was like, he kind of was just said, like, I don't think this is the right, he's like, you've had some pretty cool gigs. He's like, I just don't think this is the right fit for you. He said, you're, you know, like, it came down to me and one other person. I think it was Miles McPherson. I think Miles, you know Miles here?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think Miles did that. And I'm pretty sure that's what it came down to. And, but, so, yeah, he did me a favor and was just kind of like, this isn't the right path for you. You know, like, so. He was right. And, yeah. So, those are the only two auditions. They were uncomfortable. Auditions are uncomfortable.
Awful.
So, not fun.
Awful.
It's not fun.
It's so much better to be, go on tour with people, get, and then they just know.
Or when
you.
They just go, like, yeah.
And they're later like, hey, dude. Can,
yeah, just
Fred,
come play with us.
Fred,
yeah.
Come
we
on,
have
man.
A gig. Yeah, let's go do it.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's better than that?
Nothing. Yeah. That's,
right.
That's the way it. And that's how everything has been. You know,
yeah.
It's like, that's had the natural
yeah.
things that have happened for me and been the best situation. That's just, yeah, that's what it needed to be.
So you're just in a situation, like you're saying, 12 years, and it's like,
just coming up.
It ain't
we'll
broke.
12 years next.
We don't fix it. We just leave it alone. It's like, it's good.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's played. We've all played together in different bands
yeah.
throughout the years, and it's just been, Cheryl is the sweetest, super cool, very grounded, just a good hang, and it's like, it's been an ideal situation for me, being, doing sessions and stuff in between everything, like,
mm-hmm.
being able to work in town.
You like that, you like those. Doing the session thing, you like
I do.
It, yeah.
I mm-hmm. love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go on the road, like, full time again at this point?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if Cheryl was like, we're going to go out, she wouldn't. But if she was like, we're going to go out for 6 weeks or whatever, you know.
Right.
I would do that, you know. But it depends on, it would depend on who was calling.
Mm-hmm.
But I would entertain anything that I thought the music was great. I have no desire to leave Cheryl, and, you know, to leave that situation is pretty ideal for me. So I don't know. I don't know what's on the horizon, but
yeah.
It's like, I'm just gonna keep doing what's happening because nothing bad is happening. It's all good.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
And the musicians here are all, like, stellar. There's every kind of genre here. It's like, everybody's doing everything, and everybody's, like, insanely good at it. Amazing drummers here. Amazing everything. Every instrument you can think of, they're here, and they're all really good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like a, it's a quality scene.
It's no different than, it's like being back at Berkeley. Everyone's just looking
yeah.
around like, God damn it.
Yeah. And it can be intimidating, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Like, of course.
But yeah.
But that's the best, isn't it, to play with people that when you think, at least in your mind, you're going, they're better than me.
Oh, yeah. That's what, yeah. That's like,
that's the dream.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah. I welcome that yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. When somebody who I asked me to come play a gig with them or whatever, I go like, ooh, can I do that?
Right.
And they go, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna try it. They asked me to do it, so I might as well.
Yeah.
Like Robin Ford asked me to play a gig. You know Robin Ford, the guitar
yeah.
player, who's like
yeah.
a monster guitar player.
Yeah.
But and I did the gig, and it wasn't what I really expected it to be either. It wasn't like super chopsy. He didn't even want that for the thing that we did, because he plays with like Vinny and all these like monsters,
yeah.
you know.
Right.
They'll go tour Japan and tear it up.
And how did he even find you, by the way? How did he see you
just through friends. I don't know.
He got recommended.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And we had met a couple times. I think he was at, I'd played a handful of the Warren Haynes Christmas Jams in Asheville, North Carolina. And that was the first time I met Robin, was out there. He was just there hanging out and sitting in with people and jamming and stuff like that. I can't remember. I think here maybe his drummer couldn't just, maybe his drummer recommended me. Couldn't do a gig and was like, oh, try Fred, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Man, I get it, man. It's great. I love it. I love the trajectory. It's the real thing, you know, when you think about it. It really is. When you put it all, you see? Even when you have to say it all.
It's hard, I know.
Right?
So, yeah, it is. It's a lot. It's hard to envision sometimes how the timeline went, but, yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot of, but a lot of great people, you know, a lot of great friendships. And that's what it's all about, like we said. And actually, the other day when we played a gig opening for James Taylor, mm-hmm. we did Summerfest up in Milwaukee, and we've played a few gigs with him, but it was Steve Gadd is playing, and I've gotten to hang with Steve a couple times, and it's incredible, always. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
He's so sweet.
Yeah.
And Dr. Steve Gadd, sorry.
Oh, Fred, yeah. I can't do the Rochester, the Gadd speak. You need Zach Danziger to get it going, yeah.
But he was just like, that's what he said. Like, we were getting ready to, or we just got off stage or something. And we were leaving during their show, so I was saying goodbye to him. He was like, man, so, you know, let's just keep in touch. This is what it's all about, you know, like just making friends on the road, just hanging and talking. Making friends, and I was like, holy shit.
Steve Gadd wants me to keep in touch.
Yeah.
So do you?
Yeah.
You text?
I emailed him. Okay. I emailed him right after that.
Good.
Sent him some pictures that we had
taken.
And we had emailed over the years just some like photos from
some
gigs and stuff.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, he's a total sweetheart. That was the first time we actually got to sit and like have a meal together at this last gig. And we just sat and talked about our families. We talked about our children and stuff like that, you know. We weren't sitting there going like, so what symbols, you know.
Right.
You know, talk about life. And,
right.
Cause,
you got to open him up, man. I'm telling you this. See him. I'm sure he's, I mean, there's a whole nother side of him.
Yeah.
That you don't see anymore. Like, he's such a grandfatherly, you know.
Yeah,
like, totally. But dude, let's talk about the blow in the 70s. You know what I mean? Like, what kind of wild shit were you into, man?
I am kind of curious.
You know what I mean? Like, that guy has wild stories. You know he does. Yeah. Oh, you know
it. I hope he remembers them.
Like him and Richard Teague, they were tearing it up on that Paul Simon era. And
I can't even imagine.
Like, you look back at that movie, One Trick Pony, or all, you know what I mean? Like, coked out Steve Gadd.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got some really
like wild-eyed Steve Gadd.
Yeah.
You know. But they all kind of, you know, eventually they end up there, don't they? That kind of soft grandfatherly, like, aw shucks.
I know.
You know?
I love it.
There's like that aw shucks edge to him now, you know? Just.
Yeah, it's very cool.
You know, he's like out of a Rockwell.
Totally.
Painting now, but.
Such a, yeah.
Meanwhile, under the hood.
You know, yeah, he lived I mean? It. He really lived the life.
Oh, yeah.
A real icon.
That dude's hardcore.
A true legend.
Well, he's our.
I mean, it's like,
he's one of them. I mean, there's a few guys, right? Like, who would be on Mount Rushmore?
Yes.
There's a few.
Yeah.
He's one of them.
I know. Yeah. And he's still playing his ass off. My God.
Yeah.
Like, watching, sometimes I watch videos of him, like, when he tours with his band in Europe and stuff. Like, tearing it up.
Yeah, with Babco on keys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Larry Goldings now, I think.
Oh, Larry Goldings.
Yeah, because Larry's out there now with James Taylor. But, sick.
Both of them been on the show. Babco and Goldings. We've had them all, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Not Gadd.
And Babco was in Cheryl's band. He did that tour with Doyle.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was a short-lived period. That was like that. For that record, she toured with the band that made that record. It was like one year, basically. Because Peter Stroud, who has been with her, he's our band leader. Mm. He's been there. He's the one who got us in the band that I was telling you about. He's been there almost 25 years. That was the one tour that he didn't do.
Oh, I see.
And so, yeah, that was like a short-lived kind of thing. It was just a sort of an experiment. Hmm. Like a little shift for a minute there. But
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, man, look, I appreciate you doing, because I know, by the way, folks, I mean, Fred was in town. You just got into town, back into town.
Yeah.
From Cheryl, right? We've been
playing a couple of gigs here and there, yeah.
It was like flying out.
I'm playing it. Well, I'm leaving again on Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
We got Friday and Saturday, but I'm in the studio all this week.
He was in the studio all week, so it was like he carved out this time.
Yeah.
And that's why, hence, if you're wondering.
But I love your podcast, and I'm.
Thank you.
I was nervous to do it, honestly. I'm terrible at interviews. This is not, you know.
Did you think about not doing it? Were you like, maybe I won't?
Yeah, of course. I always think that.
Yeah.
Anytime I get a call to do an interview, it's the first thing that goes through my head, don't do it.
Right, right. Right, run.
Yeah. I don't know, interviews, I just feel like I'm in trouble or something. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to do this one because I'm a fan, so.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Fred. Yes. And you know what? It's a long time.
When I'm out here cutting my grass, that's what I'm listening to, either your podcast or I listen to Conan. Or
Conan Needs a Friend.
Yeah, that's my favorite one.
But. Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's a long time in the making, and as you know, it's like it's got to be in person. So it takes time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's many guys. It's like, this takes a long time.
Yeah.
To come around. So it's real. You know, we got to be in the same place, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right on, man. I'm glad you said yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad we made it happen. And your neighbor, let's give him a shout out. What's the first name?
David.
Of course it's David.
David Seahorn, yeah.
David Seahorn. Yeah. Folks.
David and Connie.
Well, it's
They're
a great
the
name.
They're sweetest neighbors.
I want to dislike him, but it's a great name.
No, you can't dislike him.
He's kind of a star now on the show.
He's awesome, man.
On the lawnmower.
Yeah.
He kind of appeared. He made an appearance tonight.
He really did.
He was kind of the third character. In this episode.
He's awesome.
He's a piece of work. Yeah. Fred, man, thank you. And you know, you just keep going, man. You're a great guy.
Oh, thanks.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming.
Thank you.